Welcome to Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls. On Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls, we're ambitiously integrating our minds, our emotions, our will, and our intellect, yes, even our intellect, with the Catholic faith so we can roll up our sleeves and address the tough issues that life presents to us. Our topic today, preparing for marriage, the essential elements of marriage, and our special guest is Dr. Patrick DeViatri. Welcome to the program, Dr. DeViatri.
Hello, Art. How are you?
Great, great. Listen, let me tell the folks a little bit about you. Your extensive resume here. Dr. DeViatri has a doctorate in humanities and a clinical degree in family counseling and psychology. He is the executive director of the Family Life Institute in Manassas, Virginia. He has a diplomat in family counseling from the University of Navarre in Pamplona, Spain, with over 25 years of clinical experience. And he has been the associate director of the Family Life Office in Peoria, Illinois, the author of 11 books on marriage support and preparation, and has participated in the Vatican on topics of globalization and bioethics. Dr. DeViatri, at the very least, you sound like a busy guy. I appreciate your spending the time with us on this critical topic. Now, just to start off, I think most people would agree our culture is one of where marriage is a high casualty in our culture, and I think the whole aspect of talking about the preparation for marriage is essential. It sounds like if we don't prepare for it, if we just jump into it, the risk of failure is pretty high. So can you talk to us a little bit about what you think some of the key aspects of preparing for marriage are?
Well, the problems you're alluding to have to do with the difficulties that we see in marriage today. There's two things. We see that there's a high rate of divorce, and there's also a high rate of marriages that are annulled. So within the church, you're looking at these two challenges, and that is, one, to form a covenant that's valid, and the other challenge and difficulty is to live it out. And so essentially what our work is to try to change things is not so much to point out what's wrong here, what's wrong there, but maybe what's right that isn't being seen. So in order to help a couple to form a covenant and also to live it out, we look at two qualities and two areas. One has to do with understanding what the essential vision or the essential obligations of marriage would be. And the second area has to do with the capacity to fulfill those obligations.
Now, you mentioned right out of the gate, Dr. DeViatri, a covenant. Now, how does a covenant differ from a contract?
Well, the essential difference is simple. Civil contract is based upon certain conditions, and it's based upon certain terms. So, for example, a person would say, if you give me your car, I'll give you some money. And then if I violate that, if I don't give you the car, you don't give me money, the contract is over. However, with a covenant, you're not exchanging things, you're exchanging persons.
Mm-hmm.
It's a union of persons, and also it's unconditional. It doesn't make any difference whether the other party keeps their part of the bargain or not. That the first person is obligated to unconditionally keep their contract or their covenant with the other.
So this is one of the first steps of preparation, then, is just realizing kind of what they're getting themselves into. This is not contingent. There's no escape clauses. This is forever. And that's a major commitment.
It is, because most couples go into marriage intending for this to be permanent.
Mm-hmm.
However, there is this sense of condition. So one of the things that we do is we ask certain questions. We present certain scenarios so that they can see and identify within themselves how those conditions may exist, and that they have to come to the point where they realize this and understand that vow will be radically different for them. So, for example, most people would say, well, I'll be faithful to you unless you're unfaithful to me. They can't imagine the idea that you could say to someone, if you are unfaithful to me, if you leave me and you desert me, I will remain faithful to you until I die. But that's exactly what the vow is saying, and that is something that couples need to understand clearly as they enter into marriage. But also then in marriage support, I will ask people when they come in and they're looking at their marriage and their difficulties, what was your vow? Do you intend to stay together and honor that vow? Are you going to be faithful to each other despite what's happening to the other person?
So an awareness that it is not just a contract, it's non-contingent. Almost what you're saying, no matter what, we need to go into this and continue in it with the attitude of no matter what that other person does, not that that's unimportant, but in this regard, no matter what he or she does, I'm committed to this. I've given my word. I'm not looking for exits or ways out. And then to really reflect on how that vow carries out throughout the marriage, how that covenant carries throughout the marriage.
Yeah, because that's exactly what the vow is. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what's being said. It's always been said.
Mm-hmm.
That has never changed. It's just that modern society has changed it. And what this means, to be able to do this, means that you're willing to be lonely. You'll be really to be alone without another person for the sake of loving that person that may reject you. So that's a hard reflection, but it's an important one for couples to consider before they enter marriage. But it's also the difficulty after marriage. You see it so often where people let each other down and they want to walk away from the marriage. And sometimes they're abandoned. And some of the greatest heroes we have today, in some respects, are these people who are teaching their children about fidelity when the spouse has deserted them, yet they remain faithful.
So what are you talking about, a radical faithfulness, a radical fidelity with no exit, no strings attached?
Yes.
And that takes a very mature love to get into that. So the whole idea of these kind of young pups going into marriage, it's easy to imagine many are not aware of what this vow entails.
No, and the reason they're not aware of it is because of the fact that they don't understand it's related to their own dignity.
Hmm.
It's the dignity of the human person that requires this kind of gift. That because a woman or a man has such a dignity, no one has the right to enter into intimacy with them without pledging themselves in this way for all eternity. It's because of the dignity of a human being that this is required. And I think because we've lost sense of the dignity of a human person, we also lose sense of this obligation to love someone in this way, and that they have a right to be loved in this way in the state of marriage.
So, Dr. DiViatri, you're not just highlighting this is not just some kind of a special love. This isn't kind of some extreme thing. You're saying that a commitment like this, a commitment which a covenant represents, is necessary, is a requirement to retain our human dignity and to be able to be really intimate and loving with each other.
Yes, it's consistent, and it doesn't make any difference what we've done. That's one of the reasons people keep coming to the church. You think about all the things that are going on in the world today, especially right now in the United States, the scandals that are happening. If people increasingly...
We'll have to bring this up on the other edge there. Hold that thought. You listen to Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls. We're discussing preparing for marriage with Dr. DiViatri. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls. Our topic today, preparing for marriage, the essential elements of marriage. Our special guest, Dr. DiViatri. Well, Dr. DiViatri, you were talking about the necessity of seeing the commitment as a covenant, and then you tied that in with the very dignity of a person, and I thought I cut you off a little bit. Maybe we can pick it up there. From the covenant to dignity, what does that tie in and where does it lead us in marriage?
Well, it leads us throughout the marriage. Because the essential component is that we have a dignity that requires the sacrament, which requires this vow, this kind of commitment, because it's so great. We forget what it means to be made in the image and likeness of God, and that human beings, because they can know something, they can understand something, they can choose something, they're not like animals. And so people come to the church now because after all they've done, and they've done a lot of things wrong, they can still come to the church and be given this sense of dignity that they can enter into this kind of a covenant, this kind of a vow. And they kind of know now that the ways of the world and marriage are futile. They know the divorce rate. They've seen this thing drop all around them. It's not like it was 20 years ago. They're hoping that what the church has to say is true, and that there is a better way than what they see in the world. And it all has to do with the human dignity and the ability to choose something, to know something, and to be able to rise above what's around them.
So it's the really kind of, it's a quality of the disappointment of the world around us, and I think that's a really good point.
Mm-hmm.
Person puts the periscope up, you do see disaster all around. So
right.
If one's really trying to preserve one's marriage and trying to be a person who feels dignified, let's say, to use your word, the church is one place where this is offered and promised, and people are starving for that.
Yeah, that was one of the things we were trying to do in the beginning, is to help them understand the authority of the church. And what we saw when we thought about it is they already see the authority of the church. They understand that the church is the guardian of marital love, and they're coming to the church for formation. They come because they're looking for something more. They want to be able to stand up there and say, this relationship is good, and they want the church to say it's good. And so in order to enter into it, they come to the church, and they need to understand things. They need to understand what a vocation is, what a calling is. They need to understand what the vow is that they're entering into, what a covenant is, how it differs, as you pointed out before with your question. Why is it different from a civil contract? Why is it unconditional? Or even the desire for sacrament. We find that even that is connatural, or it's within the person. If you think about it, when a couple comes together and they fall in love, they say, I will love you forever. I want to love you forever. I want this relationship to last forever. Everybody says this. They don't say, I'm going to love you for 6 months. I want to marry you for 2 years. It's forever, yet they're going to die. So they still want this love that lasts forever. And what the sacrament is God's response to that love and that desire. Because the sacrament is something that brings them into his love, which is eternal. And so this is a very important dynamic that couples can move into, understanding the nature of the sacrament, how it differs from, say, just a natural marriage, and how the sacrament is a response to them. It helps them to love, and it makes their love eternal, but also will give them the grace that they need to live it out.
You're highlighting something very important. I think sometimes the conception of the church's role here, so let's say a critical conception is the church just requires couples to stay together. But what you're pointing out is the church is the vehicle through Christ of giving grace to the couple so that they can actually have the hope and faith that their desire for, well, for an eternal love, really, is something that can be met.
They look around them, that it's not doable. If they look around them, what they experience is, I will love you until it's too painful. And when it reaches too much pain, then we will separate and divorce. Where the church says, yes, this person is going to fail you. This person is going to let you down. However, there is a grace that will enable you to forgive them and for the two of you to overcome so that you can stand together. And so that even if adversity happens to them and if suffering takes place, because suffering is so much a part of life, it's a part of loving. That the same suffering that drives one couple apart brings another couple deeply together. It binds them. And that's what the church is saying, that even if you experience hardship, it'll deepen your love. And that hope is what prompts people to come to the church and return to the church. Because if you look at human condition, it's awful. There's despair all around. However, within this concept, you're saying, well, okay, even if it's bad, at least we have each other. At least we can find some way of working through it. And that's what the sacrament promises. Because without that grace, really, what you're required to do in a Christian marriage, in a Catholic marriage, is quite impossible. St. Thomas said, if it's not for a special grace from God, it's impossible for two people, a man and woman, to live this way. The grace is a sacrament that enables them to do this, to live this out.
So that sense we have that really I can't make it through the long haul is, in a sense, not necessarily the road to despair, but the road to a sacramental vision, which is, on the other hand, I have this desire to live with you forever. Mm-hmm. It's what's right and proper. And now with the grace of God and a real literal thank God, now I have hope that we can overcome this. And you're being very clear as well, I think, that there's no promise of there's no promise at all that there's not going to be a cross in marriages. This is not a Pollyannish view. This is providing the grace and support to not only overcome these things, but transform them into opportunities for love.
Well, this idea of suffering is not really appreciated by our culture. It doesn't want to suffer. You see this in so many things that are happening now. However, if you stop and reflect upon it for any length of time, you see that suffering is a part of love. You think, what is it you experience when you see your child born, the first child born? How many times do you see people crying and sobbing when they're happy? that everything that is good and beautiful, you look at great art or a story of a noble and virtuous death, you sob. And so that happiness and suffering are so much related, and we think about happiness in the next life, and this is what we help couples to see, that their desire for happiness is a desire for union with God, because like the Greeks say, call no one happy until you're in the next life, when you're united to God mm-hmm. in the next life. However, we also know if you're united to Christ on the cross, if you were to hold him, you're going to experience suffering. And yet, you're united to happiness at the same time. And that's what marriage, Christian marriage, is. It's two people embracing each other. And if it's a cross, if it's suffering, but they know they'll love each other because they're willing to be there with each other during that time.
Let's pick this up on the other end. You're listening to Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls. Welcome back to Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls. Our topic today, preparing for marriage, the essential elements of marriage. The person who's giving us those essential elements is Dr. Patrick DeVietri. Dr. DeVietri, there's so much that young couples, that any couple really, needs to think about, not only before marriage, but when they're in marriage. And you've talked about the dignity of marriage and that how our quest for a covenant is not quixotic, but really is something that preserves our dignity. You've talked about a sacramental view of marriage, which means that our marriage is infused with the love and grace of Christ, so that which looks impossible becomes not only possible, but really inevitable if we stay close to the grace of Christ. You've also talked about overcoming the suffering that marriages will produce and will have, and you're saying those need not be causes of despair, and that need not be the time to exit from the marriage, but can actually be an enhancing part. And I think you're talking about that marriage has a lot of goods for us that it offers us, and maybe this is a point to talk about some of the goods of marriage.
Well, that's what's essential for understanding. When you deal with the canonical issues of marriage in a valid marriage, you have to understand what the goods of marriage are. And it is these goods, it's these four goods of marriage that enable someone to be able to live out the marriage. And there's the good of permanence, the good of partnership, the good of fruitfulness, and the good of fidelity, so that when they marry, a couple vows these four goods. They'll say, I will prove my love to you each day for the rest of my life by being your partner, an active partner with you, that I will do things with you, we'll be mutually equal, and we will share important decisions and our life together, all of our life. And then we say it's permanent, it's until death. It's not going to end. It's not going to be a conditional relationship. And then they promise that it's going to be faithful and exclusive. And that fidelity isn't simply that they're not going to enter into a relationship with someone else, but also the fidelity of the friendship, that I'm not going to share a friendship that's intimate with my wife and then share that same kind of intimacy socially with someone else. And also to be active and attentive. My fidelity is to be attentive to the relationship. And the last good that they vow is that of fruitfulness, that they're open to life, that they're open to God's will for children in life, but also to educate those children and pass on their values and their virtues into the life of the child.
You know, the goods of fruitfulness, the goods of permanence, I think have always been very strongly highlighted by the church. And I notice of late, and I'm thinking of the writings of John Paul II and others, of the whole notion of the friendship and the active playing out of love and equality in a radically fantastic way is something that the church seems to be highlighting much more in this with our generation.
Well, that's one of the things we found within our marriage preparation program, Christian Married Life, that we centered on. When we look at a practical aspect of love, we look at understanding and attentiveness and how important it is that a man learns to be attentive to his wife and be appreciative of what she's giving him and reciprocate the attentiveness that he receives from his wife. That is probably the most critical dynamic of love. When you think of a practical term for love, we think of attentiveness, because if you're attentive to the beloved, you're looking to their needs, whether it's your wife or it's your child or it's your husband, Your focus is upon them and how you can serve them and give them what they need. And that moves us from ourselves and our self-absorption to the first step of love, because then we can respond and love them in the way that they need in this moment.
I think that's important to highlight as we're talking about the essential elements of marriage, of how to get beyond self-interest. And it sounds like you're kind of highlighting our need to be attentive is really the drawbridge that gets us away from being self-obsessed to being self-giving.
Yeah, women understand this. I think that women are much better at it. Usually within 3 to 5 years of marriage, things start flying at the guy. And his wife starts saying to him, because he's not learning it, she starts saying to him, you know, you're not paying attention to me. You're not listening to me. You love your work more than you love me. You spend all this time. You say I'm so important to you, yet I see you spending all this time in front of the television. I see you spending all this time at work. And he says, well, I love you. That's why I'm working. Well, fine. But meanwhile, pay attention to me. So this is the way the dynamic plays itself out, but it's a very important one. We look at the attentiveness that a woman desires, and I don't see it as being a selfish thing per se. It is something that I think God was referring to when he says it's not good for man to be alone, because men are self-absorbed. So what happens when they come into marriage, they have to move from themselves to attend to someone else, to their wife and then to their children, where I think that this quality is more natural to women. They are by nature a bit more attentive. And men have to learn it. But it's a very important quality.
And it's a good of marriage that is in marriage is where
right.
men can learn this and have the grace and, of
right.
course, the support from
exactly.
our wives to do that, to overcome the tyranny of being self-absorbed and self-concerned.
Right. Very, very much so. So when you look at these goods, then you then consider, well, do they have the capacity to, you know, to effectively will these goods, to carry it out? And that's where you look at couples, and you help them look at virtues, their character, their family values, their ability to communicate, and their capacity for those things, and again, the idea of attentiveness. And so it's these two areas of understanding and then the capacity to fulfill what you understand that are really contained in the essential vision of marriage and are the objectives of good marriage preparation, then also marriage support.
You know, even though our culture is a culture of divorce, it's a culture of marriage and remarriage and remarriage. It's almost like you see everybody constantly, even after failed marriages, returning to marriage, looking for something to make them a whole person.
Right.
And you've brought out the goods and you've brought out what marriage has to offer. And while somebody might be taking notes of this and saying, well, I can't wait to talk to my kids about this, we also need to look in our own marriages as well and see if these qualities, these essential, and again, and not optional elements, but if these essential elements are operating our marriages today.
Exactly, because when we speak of marriage preparation, there's three stages. One is immediate, and that's what people normally think of when they're engaged. And then there's proximate when you started, you know, dating and courting. But however, most marriage preparation is in the home through the experience. And parents don't talk about these things in this way. They live these things. That's why it's important for couples to think about their vow and their values and their virtues. Does their life express what we're talking about to their children? Because by the time they come to the church to say, I want to marry this woman, they've already been formed. And that last preparation process is more of a confirmation of what they were taught within their families. I'll tell a couple, you want to know what it's like to live with this woman or this man, look at their family.
Thank you, Dr. DeViatri. You've been listening to Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls. Today we've been talking about preparing for marriage, the essential elements. Dr. DeViatri, thank you very much for joining us. I hope we can have you on again.
My pleasure.
If you want more information about Healthy Minds, Healthy Souls or the Alpha Omega Clinic and Consulting Services, please call us at 571-216-9651. On behalf of our engineer, Stephen Grumman, I want to thank you very much for joining us.